This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Horizon International School.
Helen Farmer with you for Eye on Education. Talking AI in the classroom. What's happening now with teachers and their workload? How's it helping with content creation for lesson planning and in higher education too? Plus, it was Barry from Beat the Cyberbully who was on hand as he talked about some of the hot concerns that parents have when it comes to tech and trends. How can we keep our kids safe online, whether they are 5 or 15?
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Horizon International School.
Joining us in studio to take my questions slash concerns and yours is Barry Lee Cummings, a world-leading expert in cyber safety, founder of Beat the Cyberbully. This is a platform that provides education, awareness, training in online and mobile topics for children and young people, but also as parents too, and really helping them promote safe, responsible online communications. He's often involved in chats where parents feel overwhelmed by this widening gap of technology in their children. It's on hand today to answer my questions and yours. Guide us through the latest tech and trends. Barry Lee Cummings, it's been too long. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me in. It's always a pleasure to be here. So thank you very much.
And I always feel like there's something new to talk about because it's such a rapidly evolving space. I mean, a new platform is popping up, a new function, a new safety feature, something else to be concerned about. It feels like every single week.
Absolutely. It's I would say probably daily rather than weekly. Mm. And not only just new things, but our children figuring out new ways of using what's already there to bypass what we're trying to do in terms of protecting them and getting themselves into situations. So it is an ongoing, and this is a really important point, actually. This is non-stop for mums and dads, especially, that this is not going to get to a point where we say, OK, we're done. We're safe.
A bit like Dubai building.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's an ongoing project. And there isn't a right, we're there. It's a case of right, we've caught up a little bit. We've caught up a little bit. Now it's changed. Keep going, keep going. Mm-hmm. And that's just the nature of the game, because as the technology evolves, which it's going to, we're not going to be able to stop that. We have to then, right, we've got to take 2 steps forwards. Then our children take 10 steps forwards. Right, we need to take another 2, and it's just consistent.
This might seem like an obvious question to you who deals with these topics on a daily basis, but why is it so important that parents do stay on top of this technology? Because, as I said, that widening gap, it's very easy to go, oh, that's technology for other people, or I'm just going to ignore that and hope it goes away.
Yeah, and I think this is a really important point because there, whatever happens, the technology is going to become even more a part of our lives. If you know, some people are going to say, oh no, really? It's already too much. So, well, it's going to get more. And the more that we as mums and dads don't step up and address what's going on, the further back we get, the bigger the gap between us and our children gets, the bigger the problem around cybersecurity, cyber safety, even our ability as mums and dads to empower our own children to take care of themselves, which is really where we want to aim towards, is helping them to get over, because we can't always just step in and try and fix it. And in many cases, they don't want that either. So our knowledge is key in this.
It's quite a unique power dynamic, because as parents, we're used to being the ones having the knowledge, having the experience. And if we're going to put our honest hats on here, our kids know an awful lot more about this than we do. So they have the knowledge, they have the power, and we're the ones playing catch up. But as you say, in that widening gap, and it sounds dark to say, but I think it's important to acknowledge the severity of this. You know, there can be scams, there can be, there are scams, there are predators, there is bullying, which we're going to be touching on. And if we're not equipped with the knowledge of the platforms, of the, you know, acronyms of, you know, how, as you say, you know, kids and teens are finding loopholes, that's when really bad stuff can happen.
100%. And I think this is where we as mums and dads also have to have a little bit of an ego death, mm-hmm. to your point of them knowing more. Because I've got, you know, 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, soon to be 5. And sometimes I'm speaking with them and afterwards I have to go back and I apologize, because I'm thinking, yep, you got me on that one, actually, because you figured out how I've said something around the technology. They don't have their own screens. They use certain things. And this is a case of welcoming technology to get all the benefits from it.
Definitely.
But protecting them from some of the issues, and also then empowering them to deal with those issues when they come up, because they're going to happen. This is also something we need to get into our heads. It will happen. There is no getting away from it in terms of, well, you know what, I'm just going to ban the internet and I'll move to an island and that's it.
I'm going to frisbee the iPad into a Norwegian fjord and we're just going to live off grid for the rest of our lives.
And that's it. And maybe some of us could, but not everybody. And also then the question comes, but why? Why not find a way to find this balance, which is what we're looking at, of giving them the opportunity to connect with people on the other side of the planet in a second and get information and collaborate and so forth, but also help them understand there are issues with that. And when those issues arise, how do I deal with that?
Barry Lee Cummins with us today. We are going to be talking about what's concerning parents the most now: AI-generated content, privacy concerns, cybersecurity threats in gaming, financial scams, and of course taking your questions too. Varsh is asking about kids-safe messaging platforms. Erin's 14-year-old son's joined a new French group at school. They don't use WhatsApp. They communicate via Snapchat. What does she need to know?
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Horizon International School.
Barry Lee Cummins today with us, world-leading expert in cyber safety and founder of Beat the Cyber Bully. So we're talking about what's concerning parents right now. The text lines are open. If there's anything you want to get some clarity on, you want a bit of guidance on. I was just chatting to Barry off air going, my kids are asking about Minecraft. What do I need to know? All of this and more. Can we talk AI? We're discussing it in the classroom after 4 o'clock today. But AI-generated content and, I guess, crucially, privacy concerns, photo editing, apps. What's the latest, Barry, and how is it relating to our children and ultimately their safety?
Yeah, so it's again, an example of the technology moving. It's going to move. And now what we're seeing with AI, it's moving so fast, even faster than what we thought was happening, to the point where the people developing the AI are already having these conversations about, should we slow it down? And it's never going to happen, because if one party agrees to slow down, then the other party's going to keep going.
And you're like, well, hang on, we want to be making the money. Why did we back down?
100%. So it's always going to be commercially driven. But what that means is that these tools, which some of them are incredible, what they're able to do. I mean, just take ChatGPT, for example, in terms of how our children can use it to shortcut the research phase of their work. Mm-hmm. Amazing. But when I do these sessions in school and I say, how many of you have used ChatGPT? And they put their hands up. I say, how many of you have copied the answer that it gave you into your dissertation or essay or homework and submitted that? And then you get about 60% of the hand put 60% of the room putting their hands up. Mm-hmm. I say, you guys are the ones making the mistake, because you're not using your brain. And when the assignment was, give me your opinion or your interpretation of what's going on, you failed because you just copied and pasted it. Now, what these AI and these large language models can do is they can go and they can research so much information so quickly. Fantastic. Use it for that, then still engage your brain. Yeah. And analytically,
critical thinking.
Critical thinking, exactly.
Now, with the AI, I don't think there's any getting away from, you know, deep fakes. And, you know, I was listening to a podcast today talking about how, you know, boys in her high school had, you know, cut out her face and stuck it on an inappropriate image. What we're basically seeing now is an updated version of this, and the consequences are absolutely catastrophic for mental health, for reputational damage. It's horrendous, and it's not going anywhere.
No, it's not. And this is the thing. So sometimes with the photoshopped, or, you know, the I've cut my somebody's face out, something, you can tell, is that okay? If I was being serious about this, I can tell that's not you. And yes, it's done the circulation. The damage is still being done. But now with AI, I could take a picture of you on holiday, so you, our family knows this was when we were in France and there's the Eiffel Tower, and I can turn that into an inappropriate image because the AI now can just remove clothing. Mm-hmm. And so now you'd look at it. And so from a parental perspective, we might be in a situation where we're looking at it and thinking, we've had this conversation. You know that you're not supposed to do this. You as my child is telling me, I didn't do that, Mum. I didn't create that, Dad. And we're looking at it thinking, but that's you. That's a picture of you.
This feels like evidence.
Yeah, and that's the one we took. And so these questions then come into it, because we have to understand that these things exist. Mm-hmm. And that, unfortunately, because they exist, there are people out there, as they find them, tend to use them for negative scenarios. And then, like you say, this image is doctored, but is submitted to the school WhatsApp group, is circulated through the group DMs on Snapchat and Instagram. And to all intents and purposes, there is an inappropriate picture of our child, and then the damage to their well-being. And then also the trust issues with them coming to us and saying, I didn't do this. Mm-hmm. And us even going, but it looks really, really, I'm having a hard time here because it looks like you did. And this is what our awareness needs to be, you know, all of our radars going off and saying, okay, I'm on my child's side here. I want to take it at face value. We've had these conversations. They're a good child. We know about these things. Okay, how do we address this? Because they've come to us with this.
And what measures are in place for having things taken down? I had a meeting with Meta a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about a website called take it down.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, the tagline is, you know, having nudes online is scary, but there is hope. It's a service that helps remove online nude, partially nude or explicit photos taken before you were 18. I mean, which is ultimately criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. Do you feel like platforms are taking this more seriously?
No.
Not seriously enough.
Not seriously enough, because there's, I can't remember the lady's name, but she's just stepped down from the board in Meta because she believes that, you know, as a world leading expert in her field, they're not taking her seriously in protecting children for these from these platforms. As in, we're not building with safety in mind first, they're building with dollars in mind first, as most businesses do. But when it then comes to the impact on our society, then it needs to be taken seriously. So in short, no, they're not doing enough, and they're not doing it fast enough. And the issue is that, okay, if this was shared through a Meta platform, they're doing something. But if it gets shared into other platforms and then it gets indexed on Google, well, this is a whole other scenario. And getting things removed from those platforms is nigh on impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we go into schools and we talk to mums and dads and to children, we really have to emphasize is the only way to prevent this from happening is to not put it out there. But now we've got to this point where they're saying, I didn't put it out there. And it's still there. And again, this is part of this iteration, because then as this becomes a bigger problem, they have to do more to prevent this. The ability to take them down will become better. But it's an evolution, and it's not happening fast enough.
We can talk about financial scams next. I think there's been an awful lot around gaming communication. And as I said, we've got messages from you that we'll be very happy to help you out with. We've had messages about Snapchat, about inappropriate songs on TikTok being played in schools, talking tech, talking trends, keeping your kids safe online between now and 4 o'clock.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Horizon International School.
We're in conversation now with Barry Lee Cummings, world-leading expert in cyber safety. He's the founder of Beat the Cyber Bully. And we're helping parents, like myself, who feel a bit overwhelmed with the widening gap in knowledge, with technology trends and our kids. The text lines are open. We're going to be going to that in just a minute, as are the phone lines, 04871 5500. And we've got Rutba on the line now. Rutba, you've got a five-year-old boy. What's your question or concern for Barry? How can we help?
Hi, Helen. Hi. Hi, Barry.
Hey there.
Well, my question is, I'm really concerned about my son if he's falling back, because I've been very restrictive with him. You know, I have not given him any gadgets till now. He just watches TV and just an hour of TV time. So I've been like, I don't want him to get into bad habits and get addicted so early. I wanted him to first have some sports or some music or some things that he enjoys doing before he goes into gadgets.
Mm-hmm.
But that hasn't really developed so much yet. And now I'm starting to get concerned that am I keeping him away from these gadgets for way too long now? Or when's the appropriate time for him to start?
Good question.
Yeah,
I think it's something a lot of parents struggle with, this idea of getting the balance between, yeah, as you say, non-screen hobbies and activities, but also understanding that, you know, tech's a really big part of how they learn at school and, you know, keeping up with peers. Barry, what would your recommendation be? And you've got children around the same age, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. And so from my perspective, the longer that we can prevent them from being on these platforms, the better is the short answer. But in context of the life that they're leading, keeping them away is a good idea, but that has to be defined by not necessarily giving them their own device. So I don't think that you've done any damage in terms of not having any access to it, because there's the potential to go down the road of them, especially at a younger age, they're not able to define time. They don't understand why you're telling them, okay, you've got 10 minutes, and then they're like, what? I want more, I want more, I want more. And we all have that, because what's designed for them gives them that impression as well. It spikes all of the physiological reactions. But what I would suggest is that the problem we encounter is that society and other people and the children in their class and everybody they engage with has some access to it. And then if our child doesn't have any access, they become the odd one out, and that might put a target on them to be bullied because they don't have this, they don't have that. But from a familial perspective, we have to say, well, this is how we are looking to raise our children. You know what? We will have an iPad in the house, but any time that our child is going on it, we'll do it together. We'll go through certain things. We'll decide as a family which applications are educational, which ones have an educational feel, which YouTube videos are okay, etc. There's a lot of work in this. There's no getting away around it. But we prepare the digital environment for our child. We experience it with our child at this age in particular, to also set the ground rules and how we as a family are going to use this amazing tool in our household. And then we have to have a little bit of leeway because, unfortunately, and this is the utopia that I aim to get to, that we're all on the same page. I'm not sure that that's achievable because we're going to concentrate on certain things in our house. One of our children's friends is not. And of course, they're going to want to spend more time at that house because it's no rules, effectively. You know, everything's game. But the more that we can come together as a community around this and get at least closer to the same page, then we know that, you know, if they go for a play date, they're not just going to spend the entire time playing on a screen. There is something, and again, it's on us as mum and dad, an alternative to provide the alternative. What is that? And in this environment where we've chosen to live, sometimes that's difficult because outside is not an option because it's too hot. Yeah. But then we have to come up with something else, and that means getting creative in our home and what can we put together.
And it sounds like you've done an amazing job of striking that balance up to this point, Ruth, but I don't think you've got anything to worry about. No. Kind of summarising what Barry said, as you said, this is not a case of, you know, here's your own device, you know, go wild. It is, you know, we use it in communal spaces. These are the platforms that we're happy to look at together. And I think the fact you're worrying about it means you're an amazing parent, so don't Absolutely. Worry. Barry, any recommendations when it comes to parents who want to find out which gaming, you know, which games, which platforms are age appropriate for certain groups?
Yeah, so I think the de facto place to go is Common Sense Media, because they have they're funded in the US. They have this massive library, and they have the resources. So usually, not only videos, but games, movies, releases, the latest. And the thing I really like about what they do now is they have the parental viewpoint, and then they also talk to children of that age and say, well, what do you think is good and what do you think is perhaps bad about this? So it gives a quite fair view of it.
Ruth, I really hope that helps, and thank you so much for getting in touch, and I think raising something a lot of parents are thinking about. Wishing you and the family all the very best for the weekend ahead. We've got Barry Lee Cummings with us in the studio today, and we are going to be turning our attention to slightly older groups about Snapchat, TikTok as well.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Horizon International School.
Joining us in the studio is Barry Lee Cummings. He is a leading expert in cyber safety, the founder of Beat the Cyberbully, platform that provides education, awareness, training for, yes, children and young people, but yes, us parents too. Going to the text line, Barry, we've had a message here from Erin saying, my 14-year-old son is in a new friendship group at school, tells me they don't have a WhatsApp group, says they communicate via Snapchat. He's asked for an account. I'm a pretty tech-savvy mid-40s mum. Is there anything I should know about Snapchat before I agree to letting him have it? He does have Instagram and WhatsApp, but we've said no to TikTok until he's older. Any guidance, advice, settings, info?
All right, yeah, very good good question on that one. So the first thing I would say is that I don't know how they're managing the usage of the other platforms, but if you're going to introduce Snapchat, then it has to be under the same guidance where you will have access to it so that you can see what's going on. Because within Snapchat, you've got things like hidden folders. So they could be sending images to each other, putting them in hidden folders called For Your Eyes Only, and you might not be able to see them if you're logging in on your own Snapchat to check on his. If you're not logging into his Snapchat, then you wouldn't be able to see these because they are for the owners, For Your Eyes Only. So that's the first thing to be aware of. It can be sometimes used to hide visuals because if they're in there, they won't necessarily be on the camera roll either. You can make sure that they're not there. The second thing is to, first of all, establish, do they really not have any of the other ones? Because sometimes kids are very, very clever. They tell all of their parents that we all have to get on this, and everyone talks to or doesn't talk to each other and just says, okay, here you go. And they get their way. So just check, is there not another option if you're happier with WhatsApp and Instagram as those communication channels? And then just if he's going to have it on his own device, to be aware that if you don't turn things like ghost mode on, then Snapchat Maps is effectively just tracking him all over the place, and anyone can have access to that and see, oh, well, this is his schedule, that he's here and then school and then the mall and then this place and this is the routine. And again, it's a negative to think about, but there are people out there who take that information to go, oh, there's a chance for me to establish a relationship there.
I think it's important to say I found out where my best friend, when she got a new boyfriend, I zoomed in to their exact address and found out which house she was at from Snapchat Maps. So it's
wow,
like, it's incredibly dangerous. But yeah, we were spot on. We drove past and her car was at the front. Incredibly stalkerish of me, I know, but I'm just, it's, it's legit.
It's a tool in the wrong hands.
Yeah, and so this is, and it's on by default. So this is the thing. If you don't do anything, then it's there. And then you can have access to exactly where they are. And again, so unfortunately, there are predators out there who will use that information. So they're always at this point at this time because that's where their schedule is. I can bump into them kind of thing in the real world.
You mentioned it's ghost mode.
Yeah. So Snapchat Maps, ghost mode. And so if you go into the settings, then you can go into Snapchat Maps and you can turn ghost mode on so that they won't know who that person is. It's just literally a ghost on the map, but you don't know, oh, that's Barry. That's, yeah, you know, Helen. That's just another one. So then you retain your privacy from that perspective.
In terms of resources that you recommend for parents, your own platform, was that the best place to go right now in the UAE? And, you know, availing of your insights as well, yeah, in person?
Absolutely, yeah. So we do a lot of the physical workshops in schools and to parents. We also offer one-to-one coaching sessions for mums and dads or families so that if there's something they wouldn't want to ask in a public scenario, they can go online. We could do it online as well. So we record the session and it can be either as the family unit or if they want me to speak to their child on their own without them there, but it's recorded so they know exactly what's going on because sometimes, you know, our kids don't want to say stuff in front of us, understandably. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to help from that perspective, and we developed the app as well. So the point that was made before is like, how do I stay on top of all of this as a parent with everything else that's going on? We built an app called Cobabble, and into that we put all of these videos. So as something happens in the world, we get notified, oh, so-and-so has launched a new app, or they've just changed the settings on that. We do a quick video, gets uploaded into there. And I know that we're advocating for this screen time. It's an app. You have to have it on your phone. You'll get pinged to let you know there's a new piece of information, but then at least you can stay up to date with what's going on.
For anyone that wants information, if you send me the word tech, I can send those platforms over. Is,
yeah,
that okay, Barry?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, amazing. Barry Lee Cummings from Beat the Cyberbully, thank you so, so much. I feel like we've got a lot more to talk about. We had a lot more questions than we were able to get to, so we would love to have you back to explore some of these issues as they do indeed hit the headlines.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Horizon International School.
Great to have you with us today as we continue our conversations around tech trends, what's happening now, what's happening around the corner. I think we all get a little bit, I don't know, not freaked out, but I feel like there's a lot of distance between us and AI. And when we actually think about what the real life applications are in education, it's a lot more useful than we might realise. But there are ways that, well, are things we need to be aware of. So guiding us now, Mr. James Piller from Horizon International School. Lovely to have you with us. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good afternoon.
Ahead of the long break, thank you for sparing some of your time. Really appreciate it, because I think no matter what industry you're in, there is going to be an application for AI. You know, whether it is research, content creation, getting inspiration. And, you know, we know as adults with hopefully fully developed brains, it's not an infallible, perfect piece of tech yet. But there are definitely ways of using it. So I wanted to ask you about something that teacher friends of mine often complain about, and that's lesson planning. So, James, how do you think AI tools can help, dare I say, revolutionise the process of lesson planning, content creation, especially if you think about, you know, how diverse the curriculum requirements are of students? How do you see it actually working?
Well, I mean, it is a huge new tool that's come out over the last year, and there are an array of different websites that will do these things for you. And yeah, it can obviously create lesson plans. It can do those sort of more tedious things. In terms of content creation as well, it can do a lot of the stuff that you need in terms of resources. But actually, when it comes to lesson, most teachers will have those things with them already. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest advantages here is content creation in terms of how we assess our students and give feedback to them.
Interesting. Would you mind giving us a kind of example? You're a humanities teacher. How do you see it playing out in that respect?
Yeah, so I teach history and then social studies as well, of which the assessments tend to consist of quite a lot of written work, you know, lengthy paragraphs at the highest end, an essay. And that's something which is challenging for students of any level or ability, especially early on in their secondary journey. So one of the, also in terms of workload, one of the biggest tasks teachers face is marking. Mm-hmm. As well. So AI has helped a lot with this in both ways, benefiting the students getting meaningful, student-friendly feedback, and also assisting in me as the teacher, giving them that feedback in a way that I can produce much more quickly. And this is something which has actually developed over the last year plus now, as AI continues to become, you know, better and better. So where we are now, it can produce pretty good grading rubrics for the students to understand, you know, checklist-based success criteria, etc., and give them meaningful feedback in how they improve. And as I said, for me, in a time-friendly manner.
Can I ask, though, just playing devil's advocate here and as a parent as well, is there a danger of teachers becoming disconnected then from their pupils? You know, it's graded by AI. You obviously will be inputting some of that content into your, you know, reports and your knowledge.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe it's weakening the link between what you know and understand about your students and what they know and understand about the content. Is there a danger of it, you know, doing too much in kind of overcompensating for what could be a teacher's role and an important one?
There is, certainly. And, you know, we will get to the point where AI will be able to mark it for you, for sure. But that's not the approach. And this is part of the general debate around AI in terms of how it's used in the right way, right? And if you're doing that, obviously, yeah, you certainly won't know as much about your students, where they are, how they're progressing. But that's definitely not how this is implemented. Mm-hmm. This would be something for them to see as they complete an assessment and for me to tick off and refer to as I grade it.
We've got James Pillow with us today from Horizon International School talking about how AI is helping out teachers, how it's working in the classroom. I want to know more a little bit about enhancing student engagement, you know, the quizzes, the simulations, personalised education. Are we there yet?
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Horizon International School.
Talking tech in the classroom, AI in particular now, with James Peeler, humanity teacher at Horizon International School, and talking about some of the ways that AI can benefit teachers and, yes, the students too. What about personalised education? You know, in what way do you think AI can, you know, these adaptive learning platforms can contribute, adjusting to, I mean, goodness, you think about the individual needs, abilities, engagement levels of students. What role do you think it has there, James?
Well, in this case, this is certainly an area of AI that is developing and I've had less access to. But for example, from the teacher end, you can get it to analyze, you know, student performance on assessments. You can get it to analyze their engagement with different activities, things like this. And that also informs your curriculum planning at the same time. Furthermore, in lesson time itself, you can set it up by crafting prompts to do Q&A sessions with the students, for example, guiding them through different bits of work, as opposed to simply having, you know, worksheets for them to work from or things in their textbook, etc. Mm-hmm. Depending the level of the AI that you're using and how much you feed it with, it can be a point where certain students of different levels, with more needs perhaps or of higher ability, are able to crack on, and once they've finished something in lesson, mm-hmm. or they've finished a certain task, they can know to feed AI with the prompt that I've given them to continue delving into the topic and exploring further.
That's interesting. Can I ask you, with your history hat on, is there, I don't know, translation tools that can help students access, understand, decipher texts and documents? I mean, I don't want to single out Chaucer, but I'm thinking about texts that might be very, very difficult to relate to, you know, modern day language. Is it there yet, James?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is something that is a game changer potentially for EAL students. You know, the usual method that they might fall back to would be Google Translate, for example, which isn't even always accurate. And the danger with Google Translate is the more that you put into it, the weaker it becomes in terms of its output, with grammar errors and things like sentence structure, etc. AI, in this case, is huge. It really does go much, much deeper. So, for example, with an EAL student I've had before, I can upload my PowerPoint and say, I'd like you to guide the student through the different tasks and, like I mentioned before, enable a Q&A session where maybe they can ask in their native language, comfortably AI, that they wouldn't be able to ask me. Mm. And they can do that at the comfort of their device in lesson whilst the teacher is handling, you know, 20, 25 students and may not have that time. And that's something where it's AI isn't doing the job of the teacher. It's actually helping the students. And that, I think, for me, is crucial.
I think that's a really important distinction to end on, actually. This isn't about replacing anybody. And my goodness, I think you guys have earned a long break. Teachers doing an absolutely amazing job. But this is a tool that can enhance your skills, best use your time, and, as you say, help out with students being a bit of a link, really, in some ways, whether it is through technology or language, to really help them access that information and be brought on in the best possible way. Thank you so much for your time, James. Really, really appreciate it. You've got a lovely long break to look forward to. One more day to go.
Yes.
And have an absolutely wonderful time. Really appreciate it. James Pillar speaking to us from Horizon International School.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Horizon International School.
Really fascinating discussions this afternoon. We were talking earlier with Barry from Beat the Cyberbully about keeping our kids, and I include our teens in that, everything from, you know, 5 to 15 we were talking about today, safe online across various platforms. But, you know, AI has far-reaching effects and indeed benefits when it comes to education as well. We've just been talking there with James from Horizon International about what's happening in that age group. But what about higher education? Dr. Aman Abukusa is with us today from the University of Europe for Applied Sciences here in Dubai. It's the first German university in the city. It's opening for the upcoming semester. Dr. Aman, how are you?
Hi, Helen. Alhamdulillah. How are you?
I'm well. Lovely to have you with us. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. And happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day. I have got so many questions for you because it's been a long time since I was in university and it's going to be a long time until my kids go to university. So I feel like this is a real gap in a lot of people's knowledge, but it's a really crucial time. And I wanted to ask you about how traditional teaching methods differ from applied learning, especially when we're looking at AI and tech courses in particular, Doctor. What, tell us more.
Correct. The applied learning, Helen, as you notice, it's in our name, in the university name itself, because it's the heart of our strategy. It's kind of practice-oriented learning. Yes, you should have strong theoretical foundational background, but the most important thing is how to apply the theory, how to apply what you know to solve real-time problems. So because the future is not about what you know, it's about what you can do with what you know to solve problems and provide services and the product that will make life easier. Mm-hmm. So think about it, the classroom or the learning environment would be like workplace. We are preparing students, learners, with all the capabilities they would need in the marketplace, in their working place. And it's really important because we need graduates who are able to practice, who are shifting the learning from learning about to learning to be.
Do you feel like universities are able to evolve quickly enough? You know, we've got new technology, new applications for it around every single turn. Do you feel like the evolution of a university is fast enough to keep pace with the advancements in AI and tech?
They have to. To be honest, university should be able to shift into the new or technology-driven learning experiences. There is no choice here. The demand, the global demand for all these competences force educational institutions to adopt more technology-driven learning experiences, with the practice-oriented, project-based oriented, case-based oriented, because everything around us is getting into digital environments. Mm-hmm. And if in any practice, in any domain, in any field, and this is where we need to prepare the students no more of theory or knowledge transfer, but more of applicable knowledge, meaningful knowledge, something they can apply, tools and practices that they can apply directly in digital environments.
Professor, I am going to be completely honest. I was a bit of a lazy student at university. I was probably more focused on the partying than the papers. And I got a 2-2 and I have no regrets. I had a great time. But I think if I had AI at my fingertips at that time, I would have done even less. And I wondered, you know, if you had any kind of message or advice, when it comes to making sure that AI is a tool and it's not there to replace critical thinking or research skills. How can we strike that balance?
100%. Actually, this is one of the most concern I'm receiving, not only from educators, but also from parents complaining about their kids relying more in AI to generate assignments and work and the research paper. I encourage using all the AI tools. Tool is there to make our life easier. And all this has about AI and the technology. It's all about to making our life easier and to save our time to focus on the task that we need, critical thinking and creative thinking. So for me, I encourage my students to use all the AI tools. We don't expect them to design or to write, for example, an algorithm that's already there. So you can use an AI algorithm. But the key here is to be able to think or analyze the problem and what does this problem require and which tool to be used and how then to use that tool in the right way to find the answer and the solution. Because at the end of the day, we are smarter than the computers. We are smarter than any AI tool, I promise you, inshallah, hopefully.
Hopefully. We'll talk about the ethics next.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Horizon International School.
Joining us from the University of Europe for Applied Sciences here in Dubai, first German university in the city. It's opening for the upcoming semester. We've got Professor Dr. Iman Abukusa. And I've got one last question for you, if you don't mind. We're talking about AI in education, obviously higher education. But what about the ethics? What about the applications? What about the future? Where do you see this going and what do we need to know in a nutshell, Iman?
When working with AI and big data, we at the university focus on the fact that the student should be mindful of privacy, data security, and ethical use of AI. They should understand all the implications of biased algorithms. Most, if not all, AI algorithms are biased because of the data fed into these algorithms. And so this is why ethical consideration are integrated as a key part of the curriculum, mm-hmm. to teach a student how to build technology with responsibility that will benefit the community, but with an eye kept in all these ethical consideration and ethical practices. And let me say here, Helen, that we adopt the Education for Sustainable Development model or framework proposed or developed by UNESCO in our teaching, where all these goals of sustainability, including ethical practices and the impact on community and society, integrated into not only the curriculum, but every lesson we are teaching in the university.
I think that's such a good point. It just needs to be interwoven. It's not a one-off conversation. Things are changing all the time. And as long as you in positions of authority and expertise are on top of it, that filters down to our students. And as you say, making sure they're using it in an ethical way, maintaining those good soft skills and critical thinking. And yeah, the future is going to be fascinating. It really, really is. Well, all the very best, as I said, for the university, Dr. Iman. Really, really appreciate your time and your insights on this topic and wishing you a wonderful evening ahead and Ramadan Kareem to you and to yours. That was Eye on Education. I'm Helen Farmer and you can catch us live on Dubai Eye 103.8 every single Thursday afternoon.